Welcome to Cryptic Picnic, a podcast where cozy conversations unfold over episodes of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Hosted by two ghouls and former co-workers turned long-distance friends, Cryptid Picnic is sure to satisfy your appetite for the strange and peculiar.
Hack up the bodies of adults into pieces so he could fit them into smaller child-sized coffins to save on space in the cemetery and thus make more money.
That's like us going on a picnic in this park and we're just like, hey, I wonder what this is, and you just pull a femur out of the ground. Hello, and welcome back to Cryptid Picnic Podcast. It's me, your co-host, Carla.
And I am your other co-host, Ivy, and I have a story. You don't know what I'm covering, I don't think.
No, I don't think I do.
I switched up my topic. This is very, very fitting for a podcast called Cryptic Picnic. And I think I'm just going to jump right in. I have some more matcha as per usual. My story is very on brand for the theme of this podcast because I'm talking about a park, which is perfect. It's a very popular park, which sees dog walkers, children playing, picnickers, all sorts of visitors year round. But don't be fooled by the well-kept green grass and pleasant appearance.
What's the catch?
This park, which is known as Cheeseman Park. I was pronouncing it Cheeseman Park, and I had to Google it before we recorded this. And I've been, so if I say Cheeseman Park, I apologize. It's Cheeseman, all one word, Cheeseman Park. But it has a dark history to it, Carla.
Oh, no.
And that's what I'm going to get into. So, located at 8th Avenue and William Street in Denver, Colorado, is Cheeseman Park, not Cheeseman Park, described as, and I quote, "The 80-acre park is centered around a beautiful grassy lawn and overlooked by the neoclassic marble Cheeseman Memorial."
Ooh.
People also refer to it as the perfect peaceful retreat in the very urban Denver. A lot of people go there to escape the hustle and bustle of the city, but many also regard it as being one of the most haunted places in Denver. But before I get into that side of this, I want to first talk about how this park came about. Because it used to be a cemetery. Oh,
That's the catch.
Okay. How great. So as a taphophile, if anyone doesn't know what a taphophile is, it is someone who just loves cemeteries, the macabre, stories of death culture, what have you, which I have an entire podcast dedicated to. But cemeteries used to also function as public parks. Because parks, as we see them today, weren't much of a thing back then. Think like Victorian period. They didn't really have these public parks that were nice, that were well kept. So as cemeteries were constructed and tended to, many of them also acted as gardens. They were growing lovely flowers. And of course, there's the beautifully carved, expensive, ornate headstones that a lot of wealthier families could afford. This made cemeteries a really lovely place to spend your free time outdoors. Whether you had family at that cemetery or not, people would go there just to relax, let their kids play, read, paint, what have you. So this cemetery was established in 1858 by General William Larmer, who set aside 320 acres for this cemetery, which was known as Mount Prospect. And he intended for it to be a nice, respectful cemetery full of Denver's more wealthy, influential citizens.
I just imagine, like, the hooligans, like,
you
know, like, drinking beer by your grandpa's grave.
Being crazy. Yeah, this guy, he definitely had his eyes set for a very specific type of cemetery.
Was he interested in the undead?
No, he wanted it to be like very notable. He wanted the wealthiest upper crust of Denver to be buried there, and this was his great thing that he was doing for everybody.
Oh, so he was taking subscriptions? Like, you pay me, I give you the best plot.
I'm not sure, because things didn't exactly go as he planned.
Okay, that's good.
Because the type of people, like, I mean, the wealthy white people that he wanted, like, buried here, most of them already had established family plots in cemeteries elsewhere they were being buried at. So his grand cemetery he had in mind ended up being used for people like criminals, gasp, the poor, gasp, and people who died of disease, gasp. Oh no, how terrible, right, Carla?
Oh no, not the poor. No. Ah.
Oh, not the poor. As someone who grew up lower class.
I know, I was just thinking that. I was like, oof, that would have been.
Oh no. Yeah, poor people were buried here instead. Oh, how ew, terrible.
That working class.
Yeah. Yeah, so also allegedly there was an undertaker here, E.P. McGovern, who would, because the cemetery, as it wasn't quite living up to what he wanted it to be, eyes were kind of kept off of it. People were like, oh, we don't really care so much for this cemetery. So it seems as though this undertaker got away with a lot.
Did you say his name was E.P. McGovern?
E.P. McGovern.
McGovern, okay.
McGovern. Which, I mean, he certainly governed something here at the cemetery. He would hack up the bodies of adults into... Okay. pieces so he could fit them into smaller child-sized coffins to save on space in the cemetery and thus make more money.
The only thing I thought you were gonna say was he cut them up for human soup, and then you're
oh my gosh.
It's like, please tell me he's not eating them.
No, but I saw a video yesterday of a guy in California. So okay, this someone had been, and this just happened, like, by the time this episode comes out, it will have been a couple weeks or so. But someone was hit by an Amtrak train, and their part of their leg was severed off. And some guy goes up, takes the leg, and is seen on video. And I saw the video, and it looks like he's like trying to eat it.
He didn't even cook it. He picked
up this poor person's like freshly severed leg, and is like trying to eat it.
Like
and
a chicken leg?
Like, yeah, he was literally
giant,
like
turkey.
It's like a
condom.
His face, he's putting it right up to his face and doing something. It was, and then like you can hear police sirens, and he's like starts to try to scamper away with this leg. It was not a fun video. Anyways, speaking of
human soup.
Doing things with body parts. So anyways, yes, allegedly this undertaker is also getting away with unethical burial practices. That's nothing new. Find any old cemetery and you're going to probably find at least one controversy where something like that happened. On March 19th, 1893, the Denver Republican newspaper ran a story about this undertaker with a headline that read, "The Work of Ghouls," and which is kind of what we're doing, but we're not hacking bodies that we're burying.
No, maybe we should say that as much as we joke, we are very respectful of the dead.
Yeah, I actually like to respect the dead in cemeteries. Shocking. So this article talked about how McGovern had hacked up what were sometimes intact remains of the dead, stuffing them into child-sized coffins, stating, and I quote, "The line of desecrated graves at the southern boundary of the cemetery sickened and horrified everybody by the appearance they presented. Around their edges were piled broken coffins, rent and tattered shrouds, and fragments of clothing that had been torn from the dead bodies. All were trampled into the ground by the footsteps of the grave diggers like rejected junk." So not all of these were fresh bodies, which I suppose isn't as bad. Still an atrocity. Still, maybe let's not desecrate graves and dig people up, shove their remains into tiny coffins, and I guess, like, reuse that site or something. None of this sounds good. By the time the 1900s hit, the cemetery was no longer in use and fell into disrepair. It was unkempt, and locals considered it to be an eyesore. So not exactly the type of cemetery people were treating as a park at the time. And this is all very unfortunate, of course, seeing such a lack of care being shown towards a final resting place of so many lower class citizens just being overlooked. So real estate developers did what they like to do. They began to lobby for the cemetery to be done away with and have that area turned into an actual park. Funny that they have the money and the means for a project like that, but they couldn't funnel that same money to just tending the cemetery, turning it into a nice park.
Because it had poor people. Yeah.
It had poor people. Ewy. Well, it still does. So we'll get to that soon.
I'm concerned.
Yes. So the senator of the time, Senator Teller, convinces Congress to let the city vacate Mount Prospect and rename it as Congress Park. A little bit vain going to Congress and being like, hey, if you let us turn this into a park, we'll name it Congress Park. Oh boy. So families who had loved ones buried there were given 90 days to exhume and relocate the remains of their loved ones. But this was, of course, difficult because many people couldn't afford to have that done. And a lot of these people buried here, they didn't have a living family left, or some of these people might have been unknown. There was no family to contact. So to solve this hiccup in their plans on turning it into a park, they hired undertakers to remove the rest of their remains. But they didn't. They weren't even close to having removed all of their remains. An investigation by CNN, the news network, found that upwards of 2,000 bodies still remain, an estimated 2,000 bodies still remain underneath the park. Yeah.
Okay, you can't, nobody can see me, but I am over here gasping, like.
Carla's flabbers are gasted. For sure. Not even like, yeah. Upwards of 2,000. That's not like a few were left behind. Maybe some of them were unmarked. Records were lost. They didn't know. No, this, by all accounts, was just pure being a terrible, awful person and just not actually caring to do the work.
This is like a small...
Just negligence.
A small festival of people were just... not taken away from, they were just left.
Yeah, just complete and utter negligence on the side of everyone involved in this park project. Again, why couldn't they have just left it as a cemetery and just tidied it up, plant some flowers, plant some new trees there? Like, they could have really done something beautiful with this space. There's a cemetery in Kansas City, Elmwood Cemetery. It's one of my favorite ones out here. It is gorgeous. It is stunning. It literally feels like a park. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's lovely. They welcome picnickers and people to hang out. Like, I don't know why they didn't just, like, fix the place up and respect the people there. And, like, anyways.
Because of this... money. Okay.
Oh,
money.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, they have all the money to hire undertakers and do all this and all the landscaping and everything they had to do. But they didn't have money to just... maintain it. Okay.
Yeah, but even though they hired all those undertakers, they obviously didn't do their job.
I know, then they did diddly squat. So the Gazette also noted, and this is getting into more recent history, the Gazette noted that it wasn't uncommon for landscapers and people working for the park to continue to uncover human bones, sometimes entire human skeletal remains.
That's fun. That's like us going on a picnic in this park and we're just like, hey, I wonder what this is. And you just pull a femur out of the ground.
Yeah. You just find human teeth scattered around you. The Denver Post reported that as recently as 2008, workers in the nearby Denver Botanic Gardens, which is land that also used to belong to the cemetery, they discovered two rows of coffins while doing their work. And just 2 years later, in 2010, during some irrigation work being done in the park, four preserved skeletons were uncovered. So this is something that still actively happens every so often when digging, anything needs to be done there, landscaping, they actively still recover human remains.
I mean, I guess that's kind of nice, though. Okay, it's not nice that the remains weren't handled properly before, but at least in a more modern time, they are aware of the situation and they can hire the proper people to handle the type of remains that would be removed from that space. So
that's true. Like, they're getting some sort of recognition, like, hey, like, nobody knew you were buried here and now we do. And even if we don't know your name, there's still something, I don't know, to be said about just that acknowledgement of you are no longer unknown. We have found you. And I'm sure they're relocating them properly now.
I mean, I would go to that museum.
I know. Gosh, dang. There is a film based on this park, sort of. So the 1980 film, I have not watched it, The Changeling.
Oh, I've heard of it. Have you ever watched it? I feel like I've seen excerpts from it, but I don't think I've watched the whole thing.
Okay, see, I haven't either. This movie was inspired by the paranormal activity that a man named Russell Hunter experienced while living in an old home near Cheeseman Park, like neighboring it, during the 1960s. The home was located at 1739 East 13th Avenue. I'm doxing the address because the house doesn't exist anymore, so you cannot visit it. But it was February 9th, 1969, and Hunter Russell experienced strange, unexplainable banging and crashing sounds that occurred every morning in his home around 6 a.m. And they would stop as soon as his feet hit the floor as he got out of bed to go investigate. Faucets in his home would also turn themselves on, doors opened and closed by themselves, and walls would vibrate and knock paintings onto the floor. So really weird stuff, much of which could be explained through other natural normal explanations, like issues with water pressure in pipes and stuff like that. But Hunter and one of his friends, who was an architect, decided to look around the home for answers, and they reportedly found an old hidden staircase in the back of a closet, which led to a room on the third floor, which is where they found a trunk full of, and I quote, a 9-year-old's school books and journal from a century ago. Very weird. And in these journals, and again, this is stuff that's being found in this haunted house that is neighboring Cheeseman Park, like also old cemetery grounds. In these journals, it was discovered that they had belonged to and were written by a disabled boy who was kept in isolation. He wrote about his favorite toy, which was a red rubber ball.
Oh, that's so sad.
I know. It is. And just a few nights later, a red rubber ball appeared in the home. This is if you've watched any scary movie in the last, like, 3-4 decades, this is a very common trope that I believe was inspired or popularized by this, where, like, a kid's toy ball rolls out of a dark, empty room and they toss it back in and then something tosses it back out. Like, you see that all the time. So when I read that, I was like, oh, I bet this story inspired that paranormal trope. Allegedly, a seance was held in the home where they learned that the boy had actually been the heir to a large fortune, and his maternal grandfather, who had died, that's who left it to him. And so the boy's parents didn't want the inheritance to pass to someone else when the boy died, which he did. So they secretly buried the boy's body in a field and then adopted a boy that looked similar to him. And then they trained him to act like him and take his place. Now, this was information gathered by people doing a seance again. So maybe not the most incredible information.
Was any of that fact-checked?
Well, they were given directions also to the boy's body, you know, through this seance. And they gained permission to excavate where they were told he was buried. Again, this is all allegedly. They found human remains with a gold medallion inscribed with the boy's name. Then the activity in the home grew more violent for Hunter. Like, a glass door in the home blew up and cut his face and severed an artery. He did live through that. And then he ended up moving out and then had the home demolished. And a new high-rise apartment was built in its place. According to Hunter, a man operating a bulldozer was also killed while the home was being demolished when a piece of rubble flew out and crushed him to death. This is not the most credible information again. Please take everything I just said with a grain of salt. Other people that have researched this story, like there's a book that was released in way back in 1966 called The Ghosts of Denver, Capitol Hill, which contradicts a lot of details given by Hunter. So a lot of this seemed to have been, I don't want to say
exaggerated.
Yes. I was like, I don't want to say fabricated per se, but probably very, very embellished and exaggerated for again, the sake of. Yeah.
It could have been ghost hunters, like the plumbers that they're like, actually, it's just your pipes. I don't know why. Wait, I don't know why I did that accent. Neither of them have that accent.
they're from Brooklyn now.
They suddenly became from Brooklyn.
Yeah. So regardless of how true this story that Hunter gave us was, it did inspire the movie The Changeling, with changelings being a figure from European folklore, which were the fae or fairy folk. And what they would do is they would steal a human baby and then replace it with a changeling lookalike. This folklore was likely used to explain away or excuse the behavior of babies and small children. So, you know, 1 minute, my child is cute and happy and healthy, and then the next minute they're screaming and crying and they're sick and they throw up. Some parents would be like, is this not my baby? Is this a changeling? It was used to kind of ease the guilt of trying to parent.
Yeah, the baby cried, so it obviously isn't human anymore.
Well, oh my god, and it gets so much worse too, because changelings were also likely used to explain differences in physical appearances in children born with disabilities. So people would also be like, something's wrong. This is a changeling. Aww. And there were things that parents could do to try to tell if your child was a changeling. I think the worst one I've ever heard is, place your baby on a fire. And if they jump up and go like, oh no, I'm a changeling, you got me, poof, then you get your baby back and the changeling is gone. But
like
if they're
a leprechaun and you stole their pot of gold, they're like, ha, yeah, you got me.
Yeah, that's like they like jump up out and they're like, oh ha, you got me. Like, it's, oh my god. But then it's like, okay, but if they're not a changeling, then
you're burning your baby?
Baby. Yeah. And I don't know that it was always like as dramatic as like putting them on a fire. I think it could be like holding a flame up to them, but it's like, okay, you're still burning your baby. But moving on, that is a whole other topic.
That seems like fine parenting right there.
Yeah, we humans have always been great.
Yeah,
always.
we're so worried about tummy time and back time and in reality, we should be worried about fire changeling babies. So.
About little, burn.
But have you done the changeling fire test? Because
wait, can we have kids and become mommy bloggers and and just give the worst like European like folklore advice?
No. I think we both have cats and we're both very happy with that arrangement right now.
Yeah, very happy with my kitty cats. Thank you. Also, you'll never catch me being a mommy blogger. Those people are evil. So
yeah, not a fan of family bloggers, Instagrammers.
We've all probably been keeping up with Ruby Frankie and This is off topic. Let's get back on topic. So, Cheese Man Park, a park for men made of cheese. Cheese Man Park. So, rumors have also spread that Cheese Man Park inspired the movie Poltergeist, kind of for obvious reasons. Bones washing up and apartments and places being built over old graves, which is, again, this is a common occurrence. There's a cemetery out by me where this exact same kind of story played out, building up over old cemetery grounds that were not properly, bodies were not properly relocated. But in the movie Poltergeist, which has been out for decades, I was going to give a spoiler alert, but
yeah,
I don't think
spoiler.
I can.
Spoiler, Ivy.
Yeah, spoiler alert for the movie that's been out for decades. Essentially, the movie is about a family who moves into a home. They experience paranormal activity. Towards the end of the film, there is massive amounts of rain and mud as the family is escaping. And in this mud, we see human skeletons. And it is now known that, yeah, the house was built over burial grounds, making it haunted and acting like a portal. Not fun fact. They did use real human bones in the movie.
Ooh, I knew that.
Yeah. Absolutely terrible, because that was easier for them to just acquire those than going into the work of making realistic fake prop bones. Some attribute misfortunes and mishaps on the set of that movie to these real bones and weird things people would experience, such as one actor in the movie, Jo Beth Williams, they play the mom. They played one of the older people in it. They would return home after filming for the Poltergeist, and allegedly paintings and wall hangings on the walls would be askew, and they would fix them, do more filming, come home, all the paintings would be all wonky again. Dominique Dunn, who played the daughter in the film, she witnessed a bookshelf tip over on its own and toss books around the room. Dune also tragically would end up being murdered sometime after the movie had come out by her violent and abusive boyfriend, John Sweeney. Some people try to attribute that to the use of these real human bones and like a curse on set or something. You won't catch me doing that. I think that downplays the seriousness of it.
Satanic panic.
Yeah, literally satanic panic. Yeah, it's like I don't want to paint something like that with a supernatural light, because no, like this, her being murdered had nothing to do with her, you know, being on set for the Poltergeist or any curse or like hauntings affiliated with that. This was 100% the fault of a terrible, horrible human being murderer who cannot be excused with the paranormal. So going back to these bones, though, I'm really getting into some heavy subjects here. They were likely indigenous American bones, because
you gotta add that. Like, no.
Yeah. Yep. Because a lot of human bones on the human bone market, which if you ask me, the selling and trade of human bones just kinda shouldn't exist. A lot of them are unethically sourced from old, ancient Native American burial grounds, which is problematic for reasons. Like, I don't even need to get into why we just shouldn't be taking their bones and like using them in movies and stuff as props. Like, we all understand that's wrong. And of course, like, cursed indigenous American burial ground is a common paranormal trope that really kind of started from these fears that white suburban families would have as like the paranormal boom is kind of happening and scary movies and stories are coming out. Like, think mid-1900s, like books and movies for like Changeling and Poltergeist and stuff. And people are like, oh my gosh, what if I'm over a Native American burial ground and their spirits are upset with us? Ah, like that's where it came from. It's also problematic. It's outdated. Let's leave the Native American cursed trope in the past as well. It has not been confirmed by any writers involved in Poltergeist if their story was based on Cheese Man Park and this idea of like a bunch of remains in the ground causing like hauntings for people living in the area. But there is another story that I'll get to real quick that did also inspire the Poltergeist. And I'm including this just because it's really short and kind of fun while I'm on the topic. The year is 1958. and a man named James Herman received a call from his wife late in the evening on February 3rd, informing him that her and their children were experiencing some odd activity in the home, which included hearing these weird popping sounds. And they realized that a lot of bottle caps on various bottles in the home had all just been popping themselves off. And this included the cap on a vial of holy water. Ah, scary. Strange things continued. Very weird. My first thought was like, I don't know, did you like homebrew a bad batch of beer? But it's like, why is the holy water cap popping off? It's a little strange.
Well, because I was thinking soda, like the carbonation in soda, but that, I don't know that that would make sense either.
Carbonated holy water?
Carbonated holy water.
Ooh, refreshing beverage of the summer, y'all. Get that for your cryptic picnic. But anyways, so strange things continued to happen in his home. And over the following days, police were eventually involved because they speculated. They were like, a lot of people were like, okay, well, maybe someone's like breaking into our house and messing with us or something. Like, let's look into that. But they couldn't find.
It was Satan.
It was Satan because the carbonated holy water bottle popped off. Pop off. Holy water pop off.
Oh, is that where that came from? That saying? It's all
that. This is where saying pop off came from. Is this a bottle of holy water in this story? No one fact check me. Just trust source. Just trust me, bro. Anyways. But they can't find any logical explanation for this weird activity in their home. Eventually, Life magazine, which would sometimes talk about paranormal subjects, they covered their story. It got a little bit of hype, but the family would end up having to move out of the home after the paranormal activity just wouldn't stop, which is also reminiscent of Poltergeist, where you have this story of strange poltergeist-like activity going on in the home. I never defined what a poltergeist is. It's German for essentially noisy ghost, poltergeist, noisy ghost. And so it's not necessarily like a poltergeist isn't the same as like a human spirit. A poltergeist is more of like a emotional kind of loud manifestation in the environment around us. A lot of people believe it's tied to human emotions. So if someone's really angry, depressed, sad, like feeling strong emotions that can lash out on the environment around them. There's a little like poltergeist info to just leave out there. But yeah, so you can see the similarities between these stories. As for Cheeseman Park, it inspired The Changeling. Some people believe it may have inspired Poltergeist as well. But if it didn't, Poltergeist was still inspired by some other interesting hauntings. But I think that I'm going to go ahead and wrap this all up here today in apartments that still surround Cheeseman Park. Some residents do claim odd possible paranormal occurrences on occasion. According to Denver Terrors, people report shadowy figures in the park at night, which could just be like people walking around the park at night.
It could just be shadows, you know.
It could just be like
trees moving and whatnot.
No, not possible. It's all ghosts. They also report phantom wailing and screaming. To that, I'm also going to say it's Denver, and I've been to Denver. I have family in Denver, but I've never been to this park. I only recently learned about this park, and I really want to go here. But I would say that, yeah, you're in a big city. You're going to hear drunk people and screams and stuff, but you never know. And you'll often see this park pop up, especially around October. There are a lot of articles about things to do in Denver around Halloween time, and all of them list Cheeseman Park as one of the most haunted places in Denver to visit. Of course, just keep in mind to still be respectful while you're there. There are still who knows how many bodies of people's final resting places, people who were not shown the respect that they deserved. And that is Cheeseman Park. And are we feeling good?
I just realized that you are wearing a Batboy shirt.
I know. It is my favorite shirt. I wear it all the time. There's like, if I'm at home, there's a 50% chance I'm wearing my Batboy shirt. Shout out to Bat Boy.
You and Bat Boy will one day go to Cheeseman Park.
Take my son Bat Boy to Cheeseman Park for a picnic. And you can meet us there.
With your carbonated holy water.
A cryptic picnic with Bat Boy and carbonated holy water on the side. Yum, yum, yum. Yes, any questions, any comments? I will, of course, leave my sources for this episode in the show notes below. Carla, would you have a picnic in Cheeseman Park?
I would love to have a picnic in Cheeseman Park. That sounds like such a respectfully nice time.
Yeah, I'm glad that it's a history that's like known now. You know, again, there's like a cemetery. It's Union Cemetery in Kansas City. It's Carla. You still live in Kansas City. So she knows. But Union Cemetery out here, similar kind of story, a lot of disrespect, a lot of land being parceled off and sold in like sketchy business deals. And although the cemetery has a very checkered past, today they're very acknowledging of it. They've really maintained it well. They're doing great with it. And so it has become a nice place to go, despite the bad things that used to happen there.
I mean, I definitely think that in more modern times, there's a higher respect for the dead and a bit of a extreme outcomes for people who desecrate graves or, you know, dead bodies in general. So
that is true. I was talking to a caretaker at another local I spend a lot of time in cemeteries, y'all. I was talking to a caretaker at one of them, and he did kind of, we talked for a little bit about how it is a very modern and especially Western idea that no human grave could ever be touched or moved or have anything happen to it because there's only so much space out there.
Exactly.
But I don't know, it's a topic like I don't know enough about to like speak fully on it or have too strong of an opinion on, but I think that, you know, we can just try our best and I don't know,
I think
not hack up human remains and shove them into tiny coffins and have bones strewn about. We can avoid that at least.
Oh, that looks so good.
My matcha.
Yeah, Ivy is drinking matcha. It looks beautiful. Beautiful, perfect matcha.
I've been absolutely matcha obsessed for a little while now. But yeah, I think that's going to be it for this episode. I hope you all enjoyed Cheeseman Park. And stay tuned for another installment of Cryptic Picnic where Carla will tell us another hopefully fun
It's gonna be a fun time with some interesting backstory.
Okay. Vague. I like it.
As always, thank you for listening. We invite you to post some of your own fascinating folklore or delicious recipes for a treat in the comments. If you leave us a scary or a silly review wherever you listen to your podcast, it really helps us. Follow us on all socials. We are Cryptid Picnic Podcast on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook.
You can also follow me on my own Instagram at it's Ivy Boyd and TikTok at Ivy_Boyd. I promise it's a good time for even more spooky content. And join us next time for another installment of Cryptic Picnic, where we will bring you more stories of intrigue, discovery, and laughter.
Join us or else.
This podcast is researched, produced, and edited by both Ivy and Carla. Music is by Dimitri Terrace from Pixabay.